Friends of DeSoto, if you've been too embarrassed to see a live Greatest Gen show, now is your chance, because we're bringing a live show directly to you. It's the Streaming Cyboctacular, our live show about Star Trek V, and it's a riot. May 16th is when it comes out, and that night, you get to join me and Ben and a bunch of Friends of DeSoto to watch it together. There's a live chat, there's merch, there's a ton of embarrassment to go around. And don't worry, if you have something better going on that night, that's fine, because you should still get a ticket. That stream will be running through the end of May. GreatestGenTour.com to buy your ticket now to watch our streaming live show. It's almost the most embarrassing thing you can do in the privacy of your own home. GreatestGenTour.com.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to the Greatest Discovery, Star Trek Discovery podcast by the creators of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. Adam, even though our show for a long time has not shown up in the search results, if you search Apple Podcast for Star Trek Discovery, I think we're still probably among the top, if not the top, Star Trek Discovery recap podcast.
Well, all you want to do is be in the conversation, I guess.
I really appreciate our listeners being doing that kindness to us. Thank you for listening.
I appreciate them listening. I appreciate them reviewing our show, which is maybe the primary way that anyone can find it at this point.
Yeah, going on Apple Podcasts and leaving a nice review is a super big help. So thanks for everybody that's done that.
Ben, we're already to episode 5 in our brand new Star Trek series. Kind of amazing that we're already here. What is, I think, going to be a third of the way through this first season. But over halfway in the first half, as our first season is being bifurcated into 2 8-episode half seasons, yeah?
Yeah, well, we've got the 8-episode half season airing through this fall, and then it picks back up early next year, and we get 7 more.
Feels like we're heading to a fairly significant cliffhanger. My cliffhanger ganglia is fully extended right now. I feel like that's where we're going.
Well, cram it back in your ganglia slit, because we're still a couple episodes away from that.
We're cramming slit and reviewing episodes, Ben. Today's, of course, season 1, episode 5. Choose your pain.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons? Klingons? Those are Klingons?
What the hell is going on this ship? I haven't the slightest idea.
They're really having fun with the opening images of these episodes, and this one is Predator cam around the ship to reveal Michael Burnham both at the control station but also inside the Spock box in the engineering section. And within the box, the iteration of her within the box is surrounded by glowy spores and getting boob stabbed by the machine that stabs Ripper in the boobs when it's time to go for a jump.
When the spore drive engages with Ripper's nipples, it seems painful. Those nips seem chapped,
yeah,
and bleeding like a distance runner.
I think that it's not well rendered enough to have been clear to me whether it was stabbing it or just tweaking. You know, was that like an extreme purple nurple, or was it a full blown boob stab? And this episode reveals that it is fully stabbing boob.
Yeah, it truly is. This being the first contact style bad dream sequence, it sort of ends in both of them howling in pain. The Burnham in the booth howling from the pain of the nipple stab. And one could argue that the Burnham at the controls in pain over a decision to inflict this type of harm on herself.
Yeah, so she is out here advocating for, let's stop doing the animal torture to zip around the galaxy. And that's like her primary motivation for most of this episode.
So the tension in the episode is Michael riding for Tardigrade and Tardigrade rights. And both Lorca and Saru at different parts in the episode going, fuck Tardigrades.
Yeah.
Attach all the milkers you can. Get that sweet, sweet navigational milk out of it.
She sees Saru walking down Fifth Avenue in a tardigrade coat, and she throws red paint on Saru.
Saru's a real fucking hypocrite, because wasn't he the guy in the first episode that was like, you know, my people were herded like cattle and then slaughtered for the amusement of a predator race? And what's Saru doing here but being the predator race against the tardigrade?
Yeah.
He's a fucking hypocrite.
He really is. He's become what he set out to destroy, Adam.
I thought for sure Michael would throw that in his face at some point this episode. It doesn't happen.
Also, nobody has made fun of the kinky-ass boots that he's wearing.
Yeah, the sort of boots that you wear when you're really trying to work out dem calves.
The sort of boots that you laugh at with your friends in the sex store, you know? But nobody ever actually buys, right? Right?
I think Saru has bypassed the whole colored handkerchief, and by going to the boot,
yeah.
you've really made your deal. You're telegraphing exactly what sort of leg play you're into.
Yeah, he is out to anybody that looks at him as a rubber horsey.
Michael, in her case, is sort of establishing a pattern that an outsider might confuse as being anti-captain. You know, she's being given a bunch of breaks. Saru's not into it.
Adam, it's kind of like the first car that my mother-in-law lent us when we moved here to Los Angeles broke down. That's a bummer. But the second car that she lent to us breaking down, that's sort of establishing a pattern. And maybe she'll think twice before lending us a third car.
It's the pattern, I think, that's so interesting about her. And it's a pattern that no one except Saru really seems to grok at this point. Like, captains seem to have bad things happen to them when Michael is around. And the second captain that this happens to is our pal Lorca.
Yeah, so the Discovery has been real busy since the last episode. Like, they rattle off a list of great things that has accomplished since the dilithium mine victory. And that's why the tardigrade is so beat up. It is, they've been stabbing the shit out of those nips. And
you'd think they'd put like some band-aids or something on those nips so they don't chafe so bad.
Yeah. Get a little triple antibiotic ointment, dab it on the nips.
They haven't been powdering the tardigrade at all before putting it in the booth.
You gotta powder your ripper or your ripper's gonna chafe.
I mean, you could tassel those nips too. Put some tassels on that tardigrade and then attach the nipple clamps.
Yeah, but that can get to be its own thing. If you're doing it all the time, the adhesive going on and coming off is its own trauma in a way.
Plus, you don't want to be the tardigrade that's known as the tassel tardigrade. Like, that's not cool. That word starts getting around about that.
Yeah.
You start sitting alone at the lunch in the lunchroom.
At the kinked out lunchroom. The admiral with the super severe bob is taking Starship Discovery off spore drive duty for a while. And Lorca's pretty pissed.
When I accepted the command, I was given the fullest latitude to fight this war how I saw fit.
No captain likes being taken off their duty unless they're put on detached duty. And that was something very specifically Admiral Bob did not convey to him.
Yeah, I mean, she's basically saying, like, let's spend some time, now that we've proven this thing works, getting it into other ships. And since you guys are, like, the main asset of the fleet, let's knock it off with all the spore driving around for a bit. Which is terrible logic.
You get some real macro shot of Lorca's eyes being stabbed by a little pen device that he's got.
Yeah, he's sort of self-administering drugs. He tells the admiral that he hates doctors, and Man, I can't imagine.
What's a doctor going to do to him that's going to be worse than what he's doing to himself?
That's what I'm saying, man. I can't imagine hating doctors so much that I'm into self-injecting in the eye.
I think a doctor's got a better solution than that.
I have a friend whose father is a doctor and got out of going to Vietnam by going into the office where you go if you get drafted and saying, I can't go, I'm addicted to heroin. And they said, well, you don't have any track marks, we don't believe you. And then he proved it by injecting something into his eyeball.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That is gnarly.
So apparently this is something that can be done, at least according to playground lore from 20 years ago.
That is rugged.
Yeah.
Does that guy still do medicine somewhere? You got a card?
I sure hope so. But yeah, the Spore Drive is offline, and that is a fact that does not segue at all into Lorca being in the back of a shuttlecraft being taken somewhere for some reason that is never revealed, as far as I could tell.
I thought he was going back from that meeting with Admiral Bob.
The Discovery?
No, I thought that was elsewhere. I thought that was where the admirals hang.
Oh, man. I must have been writing a note.
I mean, half of what you said is utterly true, which is a shuttle is the most dangerous place to be on this show.
It sure is.
And they should do everything they can to prevent these shuttle trips.
It really is a canonical trick. He is taking a shuttle back from a conference, Adam.
Yeah, no shit. The only difference here is that he's not coming back from Pacifica.
I mean, we don't know that that's not Pacifica.
Yeah.
I guess I'm less qualified to say that because I thought that they were just on the Discovery. So.
Sure. The only thing worse than being in a shuttle is being the pilot of the shuttle. And we now have gone 2 for 2 on shuttle pilot deaths on this show.
Structure-wise, at this point, he's gotten captured by the Klingons. And Discovery gets the word that their new mission is to save Captain Lorca with Acting Captain Saru as the silly putty boss. But structure, like episode structure wise, Adam, this made me really wonder why all of the conversation about knocking it off with the Spore Drive. They don't need to have that scene to make the rest of the episode exciting or interesting. Like, we know the other arguments for knocking it off with the Spore Drive. Like, why do the admirals want him to stop being the major asset he is in winning this war?
It's a consumption of resources problem, I guess. Everyone's terrified that once you lose Tardigrade Prime, that it's over, you know? Because it's not like they have a hot rod laying around that they could stick the spore matrix of leadership into. Like, there's no plan B here, and so that's what Admiral Bob is all about.
That's She's a like, terrible 2%er, Adam. that also brings up the fact that they've, as far as I can tell, never discussed where they're getting more tardigrades from. Because if it's like an issue of using up tardigrades, do they have some resource for getting more? Like, could they, like, borrow one for one jump and then get another?
I think you were taking a lot of notes during this episode, Ben, because Admiral Bob said fairly specifically that they had never found another, and they don't know how.
So they don't have a way to actually make this work in the other ships.
No, they don't. They have spore rooms, but no nipples. Like, they have clamps, but no nipples, Ben. That's the problem.
All clamp, no nipple.
We have been waiting for someone worthy of our attention.
What? Who are you?
We encountered them.
Those are Klingons?
So Saru is like, all right, we're fucking getting our captain back. This is go time. He's like on the bridge barking orders at everybody, coming up with like a pretty cogent sounding plan. And Michael Burnham walks onto the bridge and she's like, hey, anybody seen the cap? Just had some stuff to discuss with him, W/R/T, knocking it off with so much spore driving. Anybody seen him? No?
Were you shocked that she didn't know? Like, some amount of time had passed since the kidnapping, And the ship isn't that big.
Yeah, but it's just illustrative of how isolated she is. I mean, she like, there's the other thing where she's talking to Tilly, and Tilly's like, oh, I'm sure you have tons of friends. And she's like, no, I have free time that I spend inside my head, and it's fucking tearing me apart, man.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that Michael Burnham has, like, totally saved the day at this point, nobody wants to pal around with her.
How annoying is Tilly to everyone else if it's still worth it to her to hang out with Michael, you know? Like, she's perfectly pleasant, she's eccentric, but everyone else on the ship is easier to be around than Michael.
I would love to see Tilly go up toe-to-toe with George Costanza on a It's Not You, It's Me.
Yeah, yeah.
George is getting upset!
The deal is, like, and Saru, like, tells Michael Burnham, like, he's like, hey, listen, like, we've got to rescue the captain. He's actually been captured. What were you going to talk to him about? Because I'm kind of the guy for now. And she's like, well, listen, this tardigrade is really beat up. It's not doing great. And it's not snapping back into action the way it used to. I think we're using it up. Can we knock it off with all the jumping? And he's like, no, we need that shit. Once we figure out where the captain is, we're using that to get him.
The main problem with Michael's argument here is that it's done without visual aids. Mm-hmm. If she had a picture of those nips, like, I think Saru would be convinced. That's the problem with the decision makers on this ship. Both Lorca and Saru are on the bridge making calls about transportation, W/R/T, tardigrade nipples, and neither of them have gone and seen the tardigrade. And I think if they had, they might think a little differently about how they're using them.
Yeah, it's kind of like how, like, we eat chicken, but, like, we don't individually kill our own chickens, and we don't even want to know what those chicken farms are like, man.
You wouldn't attach nipple clamps to a tardigrade if you had been to a tardigrade factory farm.
So the captain is tossed in a predictably drippy metal prison cell on this Klingon ship, along with a bearded Rainn Wilson, who is playing Harry Mudd. Famous Star Trek character, the significance of which I am a little vague on.
I don't believe it.
Welcome aboard, Kirk. Been a long time, eh?
I meant to watch the Mud episode of TOS before we watched this, but I didn't get to it because my life is a fucking mess right now.
Oh, it's not that bad, is it?
Not so bad that I can't use it as an excuse to skip an episode of TOS.
Yeah, I use any excuse to skip an episode of TOS, by the by.
Yeah, people keep going, hey, when are you guys going to do TOS?
Hopefully as late as possible, is my answer.
Maybe, like, I can see two possible outcomes. Like, we get to the end of whatever else we have to get to, and it's like, well, I guess we fucking better do TOS. Or, like, this keeps getting more and more fun for us, which so far it kind of has. And, like, by the time we get to TOS, we're so, like, mad with the, like, intoxicating fun of making this show that TOS seems like a great idea.
Boy, is that a exciting bit of speculative fiction there. Check back in on that bet in 7 years.
So the Klingons come into this room, and there's a Starfleet that's kind of like whacked out in the corner. And one of the two Klingons goes up to Mud and says,
"Choose your day."
Says the title of the episode right out loud, and Mud points at the guy that's flopping out on the floor, and the Klingons proceed to beat the death out of this guy. And Lorca's like, what the fuck was that? And he's like, oh, like, that's how they keep us from getting too friendly with each other. We have to pick who gets the shit kicked out of them next.
Lorca is medium horrified at this. There seems to be a pattern in the beatings here that's established here. There's a couple of quick punches to the face, there's a throw against a wall, and then there's a curb stomp.
We've also established that Lorca is out his eye-stabbing device, which I feel like that never really pays off at all. Like, I don't know that that thing would be a big help to him amidst all the eye torture that they inflict upon him.
Right. Like, when he gets back into his cell, he's like, oh, thank God I have this eye stabber to give me a moment of relief.
Oh, nothing relieves bright light in my eyes like a nice needle to the cornea.
Like, when you're tortured and imprisoned, are you more big picture or little picture with what's going on? I think that's really the question here. Because eye stabber's a small-time problem. I think if you're Lorca, you're thinking big picture. You probably don't need that thing.
So back on the Discovery, Saru is working hard on figuring out how to be captain. And he sets up like a computer program for himself, which is very reminiscent of like Data setting up a computer program for how to go on a date. He's like, right, how do I be a captain? And like the computer like spits back a bunch of adjectives at him.
Yeah, he's like, so in this Starfleet I'm involved in, who are the best? And what are they like? And also, computer, what are the traits that I share with them? Hopefully there are some.
Can you Venn diagram me with other good captains?
It's such a weird thing to do because, like, you're only graded retroactively. And so this sort of studying doesn't really do him any good in the heat of the moment, right? Like, he sets up some parameters for grading that he will, by the end, return to. But, you know, when the nipple rubber hits the nipple road, like, he can't ask the computer for advice based on what these other captains have done.
Computer, should I be cowardly in this scenario or brave?
What he needs is a baseball cap to hide his threat ganglia.
That's what he needs. Or just, like, grow a mullet.
He needs to get, like, the Ferengi hat curtain that they've popularized. just a curtain in the back. You want to let just everyone see your ganglia.
No.
Want to save something for the third date.
Yeah. Cram those back in the slit. Put on a half a lampshade. Get out there, man. Play the field.
What? What? What's happening? What's all this?
I'm trying to save you.
What is this?
Mud, in his scenes with Lorca and random guy, articulates the viewpoint of the collateral damage, I think, in an interesting way. He's like, you Starfleet types, and by you Starfleet types, I'm talking about you, Lorca, and this random lieutenant who's also stuck in here with us named Ash Tyler. Like, you guys are getting into wars and you don't even care that pieces of your ship are like falling into the planets that we live on. Like, yeah. Fuck you guys.
Remember that dilithium mine? Those guys were just looking up starry-eyed as Klingon ships crashed around them.
Yeah, like, you guys do all the war, but then you don't stay behind to clean it up. And Mud isn't wrong here.
No. He's got a kind of Charlie Wilson take on the situation.
Yeah. I thought his attitude was ably portrayed by Rainn Wilson here. With a beard that belongs on a roll of paper towels. Rainn Wilson really pulling off the bedraggled space woodsman.
Bedraggled space woodsman is the most absorbent paper towel, Adam.
Right. You don't want to go with the store brand.
No. Get the go premium. If you spill some cranberry juice on your countertop, you're going to want bedraggled space woodsman to sop that up. Rainn Wilson is very fun. He's like famous and well known enough that he really gets to run around and sink his teeth into this. He's really chewing the drippy metal scenery in every scene.
He is taking over with confidence and aplomb.
And I liked watching him do it.
Yeah. This other guy in the prison, Ash Tyler, is a Starfleet lieutenant. He shares with Lorca his backstory, which was that he was at the Battle of the Binary Stars, and his ship, the Jaeger, was destroyed.
RSVP the Jaeger.
Mud's like, cool story, bro. Do you know Lorca's legend? Because I'll tell you, USS Barran goes in the water. Klingons in the water. And when the Klingons get you and their eyes roll back. Dark black eyes like doll's eyes.
Dark Black Alert.
Yeah, Lorca ends up being the only survivor of the Baran, a tale that has not gotten a lot of traction around Starfleet because it's not a good look for him. The idea being that you want to go down with your ship.
It really illuminates why he is on the Discovery, a ship that he is terribly ill-suited to being on. Like, they left him with his rank, but they gave him a ship he doesn't care about or understand. Like,
right.
he's a warman, and they gave him the dorkiest science ship in the fleet. Or maybe, like, the second dorkiest.
It's like that saying, like, to a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Like, to a warman, every science officer looks like a bullet, you know? Sort of explains his conflict throughout the series.
He's loving every time he gets to put one of his people in a photon tube and shoot it out of the ship. He gives the same eulogy every time. Of all the souls I've met in my travels, his was the most explosive.
You think Lorca cares about nipples? No way.
We're going to tear these nipples off, sir. Well, tear the nipples off then. Ash Tyler reveals that he has been on this ship for 7 months, and Lorca's like, wait a second, you shouldn't be alive. You can't be in a Klingon prison for 7 months and be alive. And he's like, well, I'm kind of fucking the captain also. And we learn in this scene that Klingons have more than one dick, I think.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Do you think they're side by side, or are they one on top of the other?
I gotta picture it being one on top of the other. I mean, I think so too,
like a batleth, right?
Yeah.
Like curved like a batleth.
They don't have much wider hips, the ladies, than human ladies.
Are the balls in the middle of both dicks also like a batleth?
Not everyone keeps their balls where you do, Captain.
Sounds painful.
But yeah, the captain of the Klingon ship is also the interrogator of Lorca, and I guess he has done some like pretty clever subterfuge. He's seen that one episode of The Outer Limits and knows that the people in his jail cell may be turncoats, may be there to extract information out of him once they gain his confidence. So he's given Mudd and Tyler different lines of his story, and he discovers that Mudd was feeding info to the Klingons the entire time. And not only that, Mudd had a listening device glued to the back of his pet cockroach.
Thought for sure Lorca was going to stomp the shit out of this cockroach, but instead he just sort of rips the bug off of the bug and stomps that part of it.
They're like, we can't have Lorca be super pro-animal cruelty and then also kill an animal.
Cue the Klingons, who burst in and are like, hey, choose your pain or whatever. You know how we do this. And they ask Lorca, and Lorca points to Ash Tyler. And in the fierce gratitude that Mudd extols upon Lorca, Ash and Lorca grab Klingon rifles and start having Star Trek fights in the cell.
Some of the funnest Star Trek fighting maybe ever is in this scene.
You get a couple of fun two-handed punches, but my favorite move was Lorca using a Klingon rifle like a bottle opener on one of the necks of the Klingons. It was so rugged.
Back on the Discovery, we've had like an extended science exposition scene that turned into the first documented fucks in Star Trek, I want to say.
You guys, this is so fucking cool.
And so they figured out, like, you know, this tardigrade has some like process whereby it can swap DNA with the mushrooms and therefore, like, that gives it a passport to travel wherever the mushrooms go, which is all over the known universe. So apparently humans are the only other species that they can figure out that also have this ability.
That's convenient. Because that ship is full of humans, Ben.
Yeah, they got lots of them.
So Saru's like, cool, science, whatever. Take us to where this Klingon ship is, because that's where our captain's at. Let's go.
they've figured out where the Klingons are, and as they arrive, the jailbreak is proceeding super well. They have their Klingon rifles set to vape, and they are vaping many, many Klingons. And the tardigrade is like shriveling up into a prune on the Discovery. It is not in good shape. So Saru is like, Stamets, like, get that thing back going. And the doctor who's been helping Michael Burnham like make the case that this is nasty animal cruelty is like, hey man, I'm not gonna stand by and let you do that. Like I took an oath. And he's like, I'm not talking to you, I'm talking to Stamets. Stamets, are you gonna do it? Stamets like, fuck yeah.
He's like grabbing his own nipples, like, yeah, I'm ready.
Oh, I'm going to do it.
In one of the all time, like, we don't have the budget to show this, we basically cut back to Lorca and Ash Tyler in an escape pod. Like, when we were back on the Klingon ship, they mentioned that they were going to the shuttle bay, but we see none of that.
I mean, it's not an escape pod. It's like a fighter, and we get to see like some like renders of fighters flying around in space and taking pot shots at each other. But yeah, fighter bay is not depicted, which probably a smart choice, because you either build something and it's stupendously expensive, or you render it and it's super corny.
Yeah, the only time you're going to see it is now, and you're only going to give it 10 seconds, then it's not worth it. So I get it. But the cut too was jolting, I thought.
Yeah.
Because the show up until now has taught you how much time passes in a typical cut between settings. And this was the jump that seemed out of place. Like, due mostly to its time. Like, it skipped some time here.
Yeah, and the other thing that happens in the escape is that Lorca licks a shot at the captain who Tyler was coming close to beating to death, and the captain takes a massive burn to the face, which I'd been wondering, like, why so much loaf on her for a while now, and man, like, this burn to the face really reveals why so much loaf. Like, they're going to need a lot of extra loaf to make this burn seem like a thing going forward.
You're going to need maybe a cup and a half of breadcrumbs to cover up what's going on that loaf.
Now, when you're filling in loaf, you're going to need a good supply of peanut butter, breadcrumbs, and a drywall trowel.
You want to fill the gap in the loaf. And before you put it in the oven, you're going to want to brush it with some egg yolk. That way, your loaf looks nice and glossy when you serve it to your pals.
We're using an assortment of mixed seeds and nuts to dress the top of our loaf, which will further obscure the corrections we've made in the burned loaf.
Pretty sure she's going to come back, Ben. They're leaving a lot of people behind to get them, right?
Is this Vox Lady? Is this the lady that's got the power behind the throne? Because if it is, she looks like weirdly different in this episode.
Ben, I don't want to be called a Klingon racist, but I'm having a hard time telling these people apart.
People have taken shots at us for not addressing the loaf situation that much.
The loaf in the room.
I don't mind it. But I definitely, like, the guy with the face paint is the only one that looks really, like Vok and the guy with the face paint are the only ones that look really different from any of the others.
That's what I'm saying. Like, when your entire head is loaf and distinguishing features are completely troweled over with it, it's really hard to tell them apart.
Like, if we had seen, if this was the loaf we had seen, like, canonically for the entire time that we had Klingons, like if they started in TOS with this loaf, did Next Generation, etc. with this loaf, I feel like we would be good enough at this point to tell different Klingons apart.
Right.
But they're asking a lot of us.
We don't have the loaf reps for this.
We need some, we need to hit the loaf gym.
My people were biologically determined for one purpose alone. To sense the coming of death.
What?
To sense the coming of death.
What's stopping you from doing something you've never done before? For most people, It's knowing how that holds you back. Many people don't want to try a new thing for fear of not doing it right. And a website is a very public thing. On the biggest stage, the internet. What will people think when you've made something that was designed to represent you? Well, that's the whole point of Squarespace, because they make it so easy to look like you know what you're doing. They've got a guided design system made to make complete web design noobs look like seasoned pros. When all the layout and styling options are templatized and ready to go, you'll be making your brand or business look its best, no matter what. And if you want to sell things on your brand new website, you don't have to know anything first. Squarespace has all the payment tools that you need to start doing business right away. So go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. We need to talk. It's been a while, right? We should probably catch up. And we can really do that, because when you buy a VIP ticket to the streaming Cyboctacular, we'll get to talk, face to face. Think of it like a Zoom call, except funny. On the show, we tell a lot of funny and embarrassing stories, and this is your chance to share your embarrassing Star Trek story with me and Ben. But maybe you don't have an embarrassing story, and you're so cool. That's fine. We'll still be together, where we can say whatever we want, looking at each other during. Maybe you have a favorite bit you want to come back, or a pet you want to introduce us to. You could be doing this call from a weird shed filled with metal hooks hanging from the ceiling, like we saw that one time. Can you beat the shed with the metal hooks? Let's find out. But it's not a contest. It's just a chill hang with you and me and Ben. And if you want to do it as a group, you can. Get a few FODs together in that shed filled with hooks, and we'll have a great time. At the Streaming Cyboctacular, tickets for the show and the meet and greet are now on sale at greatestgentour.com.
Soundheap with John Luke Roberts is a real podcast made up of fake podcasts. Like, if you had a cupboard in your lower back, what would you keep in it?
So I'm going to say mugs.
A little yogurt and a spoon.
A small handkerchief that was given to me by my grandmother on her deathbed.
Maybe some spare honey.
I'd keep batteries in it. I'd pretend to be a toy.
If I had a cupboard in my lower back, I'd probably fill it with spines.
If you had a cupboard in your lower back, what would you keep in it? Doesn't exist. We made it up for Soundheap with John Luke Roberts, an award-winning comedy podcast from Maximum Fun, made up of hundreds of stupid podcasts. Listen and subscribe to Soundheap with John Luke Roberts now.
Oh my gosh, hi, it's me, Dave Holmes, host of the pop culture game show Troubled Waters. On Troubled Waters, we play a whole host of games, like one where I describe a show using limerick, and our guests have to figure out what it is. Let's do one right now. What show am I talking about? This podcast has game after game, and brilliant guests who come play you. The host is named Dave. It could be your fave, so try it. Life won't be the same.
Big Business, starring Bette Midler and Lily Tomlin.
Close, but no.
Oh, is it Troubled Waters, the pop culture quiz show with all your favorite comedians?
Yes, Troubled Waters is the answer
to this question and all of my life's problems.
Now, legally, we actually can't guarantee that, but you can find it on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Doesn't make any sense.
I sense it coming now.
None of it makes any sense. Sounds like nonsense to me.
So they beam the captain out. His shuttle is exploded very quickly, and he's like on the transporter pad. Tyler basically collapses in a heap, and the captain radios up to the bridge and is like, "Saru, get us the fuck out of here. Hit the jump switch." And Saru's like, "Hit it, baby." And there's a little hiccup, and then they jump. And this makes no sense because the tardigrade got shriveled up, but they run down to engineering, and it turns out that Stamets kicked everybody out of engineering, injected himself with tardigrade DNA, and then took the nipple pinchers to his own boobs.
Any action that happens off screen is typically bad. You know? So this was telegraphed fairly obviously at the moment that it happened. But I wasn't sure who was going to be in the booth. The head fake here is that I thought Michael would be in the booth. When it was revealed to be Stamets, I was surprised by this.
they have they've spent two episodes building up to it being Michael in the booth, and Stamets has been getting painted as kind of a selfish asshole. So him being the one who kind of took the heroic sacrifice here is a big surprise. And Saru comes over to Michael Burnham's quarters and is like, "Hey, man, like the captain's back aboard. Stamets is going to be patched back together. Okay. I realize that like you are kind of ahead of the game on this one. I want you to know that like I recognize that." And she's like, "Hey, man, like you're not really as fear bonery about me now as you used to be. Is that true?" He says, "It's not fear, man. I fucking hate your guts." he's basically like, "I'm an asshole, but a super introspective asshole that's going to explain my motivations very literally to you. And my motivation is that you were best friends with Giorgio, and I wanted to be best friends with Giorgio."
Saru has just like let the rank drop. They're sort of having a Jellicoe-Riker argument here in the room. The "I don't like you, you don't like me" situation, but we need each other. And they've been, throughout the episode and throughout the series, using Giorgio's memory as a weapon against one another. Like they're conjuring her memory as a way to hurt the other person.
And Burnham turns this right in the opposite direction in this scene. She's like, "Hey man, like let me give you this telescope that Giorgio left to me." It was pretty clear in the last episode that she didn't feel like she deserved the telescope. And she gives it to Saru, and it's like, it's an interesting scene because I feel like it is easy to read this as either Michael Burnham genuinely reconciling with Saru or her playing him like a fiddle to get back in the game, because back in the game she gets.
I've got a real hard time thinking that this telescope has any value other than sentimental, because like Michael says that it's hundreds of years old. If it's hundreds of years old, Ben, like it's a it's like a Radio Shack brand telescope, right? It's like what's Radio Shack store brand? It Tandy or like a, like is it a Kobe telescope? That thing is garbage.
Yeah, it doesn't look good. I mean, it's not like the glasses that Bones gives Kirk in the films.
Clearly, those were Warby Parkers.
Yeah. Yeah, those are nice ones.
Saru orders Michael to save the water bear, and her strategy for doing this is dump a bunch of spores on it and poop it out into space. This is remarkably effective.
Yeah.
Adam, before we get to the button, I want to talk about the couple of times that I wrote down first contact in my notes. I wrote down first contact with when Lorca was eye-stabbing. I then wrote down first contact when he talked about his motivation for blowing up his own ship, which was not letting his crew suffer the fate of being taken to Kronos and enslaved.
The bad dream start was also a first contact reference.
I feel like there's a ton of first contactiness in this episode.
There's that scene where Stamets snaps an engineer's spinal column in order to gain entry into the spore room.
So I just wanted to tag that before we get out of it, because the last scene is really interesting, and I think a long overdue but important addition to Trek canon, which is that the doctor, Dr. Culber, and the engineer Stamets are revealed in the end to be in a relationship with each other, and they're like having a teeth brush together after all of the events of the day, and they're kind of talking about the fact that Stamets like took a massive risk and also let Culber believe that he was going to do a bad thing to an animal. And I think Culber is really glad that Stamets is okay, but a little miffed that he took that risk. But it's a very interesting scene.
I mean, it's significant because it's two gay actors playing two gay characters, and that's a thing that we haven't gotten before in Star Trek, and you rarely get in a lot of television shows. Another part of this scene I thought was even more rare, perhaps, which was, I've never seen a black toothbrush, Ben.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a thing that's been invented yet. Like, are you using black toothpaste too? Like, your toothbrush is always going to look dirty if it's a black toothbrush, Ben, because of the toothpaste. It's going to look white and crusty.
I was also like, are they going to kiss? But then I was like, they just brushed their teeth, and it's a little weird to kiss, like, with the toothpaste taste still in your mouth.
These pajamas also, like, while we're talking about props that we might want to own, they look in pajamas, by the by.
Yeah. If I had the body that Culber has, I would rock these pajamas.
I couldn't tell if they were drawstring or button up, though.
Mm.
I'd want to know those details.
Yeah.
I'm a drawstring man.
Oh, really? Anyway, I'm firmly on the opposite side of that issue, Adam.
Well, to be continued. Culber walks back into the quarters and leaves Stamets at the mirror, who then walks back into his quarters and then leaves another Stamets at the mirror. What the fuck is that about?
Ghost?
A ghost Stamets that seems to be smiling, like that seems happy about where he's at.
Do you think that's mirror universe, or is that too literal of a read?
I don't know, man.
Is this how the mirror universe was created?
I would have had to have seen the original series mirror universe episodes to be able to tell you. This is where the research, our lack of research really falls apart and fails us here, Ben. Because we're really flying blind here. It's black toothbrushes all the way down.
I feel like the creators of this show maybe give everybody too much credit about how much they know about TOS at this point.
Well, that is what we're left with. A potential thruple situation with Culber and the two Stamets's.
Yeah, that's a fun Eiffel Tower.
What began as a trailblazing depiction of just normal, natural two guys in a relationship is immediately turned into a three-way.
Yeah.
Way to go, Star Trek.
Starfleet doesn't fire first. We have to. We have to. Starfleet doesn't fire first. We have to. We have to. We have to. Computer.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
Boy, this is the first one that I'm like less thrilled about. Mm. I feel like this one was the closest we got to corny Trek fun.
Yeah.
But it's too dark and nasty, and the fucks seemed like so pointless. Like,
right. Fuck said just to say it.
Fuck said just to be like, "Hey, we're on streaming. Isn't this great?"
Yeah.
And I don't want to be one of the, like, I was reading a review of a podcast recently that was like, like, this is a funny show, hilarious, really, but they say the F word an awful lot, so be careful if you have kids in the car. I was like, is that really a reason to dock two stars, the F word in this day and age? Like, on a show that is marked explicit? Like, that said, like, I feel like more so than other network television shows, the squeaky cleanness of Star Trek is kind of canonical.
Right.
It's not something that is done to appease the censors as much as it kind of feels right for the world that they live in. So everybody cussing up a storm in this and it just being like one scene where it's like, haha, look what we did, felt really dorky and stupid. All that said, it definitely held my interest, and I thought, I love a jailbreak. I thought Saru's character developed in an interesting way here. I mean, I was ready for Saru to be like in big trouble, and Michael Burnham to just be like, "All right, I got this."
Right.
But he really demonstrated some game. You know, how about you?
I'm with you on the profanity, Ben, because two scientists calling something fucking cool to me felt like Spock at the end of Star Trek VI going, tell them to go to hell, you know, after they're ordered back to the starbase.
Right.
Like, it's so cute. Like, I want the first time I hear an F word in Star Trek to be after someone's been shot and they're in pain, or they're shooting someone else, or they're fucking someone.
Yeah.
Like those seem appropriate, but like nerds doing nerd shit saying it's fucking cool is totally Star Trek cute in a way that you described earlier. So, like, I wish they didn't do that. Or at least I wish they didn't do it like this. I like the episode all in all, though. I like going to the Klingon prison. I like meeting Harry Mudd. I like the ongoing conflict between Saru and Michael. Like, eventually they've got to reach a point, though, where either they decide to be enemies or decide to be friends. Like, this tension can't last forever, right?
God, I hope not.
Yeah. So I think it sounds like I might have liked the episode a little more than you at this point. You know one thing I like a lot, though, Ben?
I don't think we have any P1s, Adam.
I was just going to say clamps on my nipples. I wasn't going to refer to P1s at all. No Priority One messages this episode, but if you have a message you would like to send to our greater viewership, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages that are heard by an audience of thousands, tens of thousands even, are $200. They're a great way to ensure the ongoing production of this show. Ben?
What's that, Adam?
With that being said, did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
Oh, boy. I really have to give it to Stamets for the poker face telling the captain he's going to go resuscitate the tardigrade. Like, I know why he didn't tell Culber he was going to go take the nipple clamps himself. But, like, that's your boyfriend, dog. Like, tell him at least that you've got a way to not be cruel to an animal. Like, you're sending right. him back to doing whatever he was doing, thinking, God, I am dating a fucking monster. So, Stamets gets it from me for this episode.
Yeah, I kept going back and forth between Mudd and Stamets for that reason as well. I mean, Mudd as a character, I would have given the Shimoda too, except at the end he has his I'm going to be made into an enemy forever by leaving me here. He has the I'll get you moment.
Yeah.
And that doesn't seem very fun for Mudd. Mudd, who was having the most fun in the episode up until that point. So true. Yeah, I'm going to give it to Stamets too.
Oh.
Double Shimoda. Double Shimoda and double Stamets. Which is a nice bit of...
There's enough Stamets to take that, Shimoda.
What do we have coming up on the next episode of Star Trek Discovery?
Next episode is Season 1, Episode 6, and we don't know anything about it, Adam. It's called Leth, or Lethy, according to the Internet Movie Database, but they did not grace us with a next time on STD reel this time, which is an interesting choice. I wonder what that's about.
I got one, Ben.
You did?
Yeah, I watched it all the way to the end. Maybe you should cue that up.
It did not play on when I watched it today. It just played the credits directly after the episode.
After the credits, they played the next time for me.
I scrolled through. It didn't have it.
Weird. Get it fixed, CBS.
Tell me what you saw.
It was 1 second bukkake of like of 30 different scenes of shit happening. I couldn't really hold together any sort of story. People are yelling at each other.
Oh, good. Any explosions?
Shit's blowing up.
Oh, that's good.
The ship might be in danger, it looks like.
Oh.
You know how they do, Ben.
One of my best friend's father is a mathematician, and his theory is that any movie trailer that has 7 explosions in it, that movie will be great, and any number of explosions increasing or decreasing from 7 puts the quality of the movie in further and further doubt.
So the bell curve up to 7.
Yeah, you want to be at 7 with your trailer.
Wow, I'm going to have to count my explosions now.
Yeah, count those explosions, people.
The Greatest Discovery is a MaximumFun.org podcast, hosted by Adam Pranica and Benjamin R. Harrison. Produced and edited by Rob Schulte. Music by Adam Ragusea. Head to MaximumFun.org/donate to support the ongoing production of this show.
please use the hashtag GreatestGen when discussing the show on Twitter. You can find Ben on there at BenjaminAHR, and Adam is at Cut for Time. And make sure to check out the Facebook and Reddit groups to continue the conversation.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.